Hello, and welcome to another edition of Medical Minds, Conversations with Guthrie Experts. As always, I'm Steve Osterhaus, joined by Dr. Corinne Johnston, who is a family medicine physician and the Chief Patient Experience Officer for the Guthrie Clinic. Hello, Dr. Johnston.
Hi, Steve. Excited to be here today and talk about our hearts, kind of an important organ in our body.
Yeah, just a little bit. Yes,
yeah.
Very important. In terms of awareness months, it gets the shortest month. It's very important, but it gets the shortest month of the year being
That's
February.
True. I never thought about that.
Yes. Well, we'll hope for leap years more often, I guess, if we can pull that off and get those extra days.
Yes.
Extra day. You know, I know we always talk about word of the day, but I decided to, you know, something that's good for heart health is probably a good laugh. And no, that's
okay.
Not scientific. We'll get to the actual scientific stuff with our guest in a couple of minutes here. But a couple of jokes for you.
Okay.
And you can rate these if you'd like.
So, okay. Why
did the heart break up with the brain?
They didn't like their shoes.
No. Because it was tired of following logic over love.
Oh, that is a good one. Head heart decisions are the hardest.
Why was the heart a great musician?
Something about its strings? Am I close?
It had a perfect beat. Perfect beat.
That's good too. I'm always a sucker for a corny joke, Steve. Give me another one.
Oh, I've got plenty. Well, you know what? I'm a journalist by trade. So why was the heart a good journalist?
I have no idea.
That's okay, because it always got to the heart of the story. Yes. If we only, you know, exactly.
Can we add in the effects?
We might have to, because these are pretty bad. All right, one more, and then we'll get to something important. Why did the heart win the poker game?
It was a flush.
That's a good answer. No, but no, it played its cards close to the chest.
Ooh, another good one. Well,
All right, today,
yeah, we're going to talk about the heart. Probably not with as many laughs, but with some good review from one of our favorite cardiologists in our area.
Alrighty, excited to welcome in our guest today. It is Dr. Saurabh Sharma. He is a cardiologist with the Guthrie Health System, and he's also the director of Cardiovascular and Prevention Lipid Center, which is located at Guthrie Robert Packer Hospital in Sayre, Pennsylvania. So, Dr. Sharma, thanks for being here today.
Well, thank you for having me, Stephen and Dr. Johnson.
You know, we always love bringing our guests on, and, you know, we try to take a look at trends out in society to hit on some of the topics that we feel our listeners would be most interested in, as well as listening to caregivers and providers within our system to hit on some of the points and some of the stuff that they're hearing from their patients. And, you know, one of those ideas was brought to us by you, Dr. Sharma. We really appreciate it because it is Heart Health Month. So it's really important to make that the focus of this episode. And we want to do what we can to make sure that our listeners are doing what they can to get the important crucial facts and, more importantly, the correct facts out there, because there can be a lot of misinformation out there when it comes to individuals' health, especially when they take it upon themselves to maybe Google a little bit too much and try to learn a little bit about themselves when really the doctor should be telling them about those things.
Yes, and Googling is not bad. You know, I encourage patients to be up to date with the current literature and, you know, but always, you know, make sure that those facts are correct by just talking to your doctor who specializes in that particular field.
Yeah. So let's jump right in. You know, let's start with, in American society, what does prevention mean? Because I feel like we are a fix it now driven culture. What are your thoughts on that?
So when you say prevention, it could be prevention of anything, right? Or any diseases, right? I'm a cardiologist, so I specialize in cardiovascular prevention. So we're going to talk a lot about cardiovascular prevention today. But I think when we talk about prevention of diseases per se, it involves a lot of things. To me, prevention of diseases will basically, the objective is to lead a healthy life in the future. It could involve you know, going to your doctors, getting your adequate screening procedures, screening tests, vaccinations, general physical examination, and all the stuff that we really like to tell our patients to do. So that's basically prevention of diseases, any sort of prevention.
Mm-hmm. And so one of the topics that you brought to our attention was in the area of cholesterol, right? And cholesterol management. And yes. I guess let's start with a little bit of an explanation for the individuals listening who may not have a clear understanding. Can you talk to us about cholesterol, the good, the bad, and those kind of areas?
Sure. Yeah, the patients hear this terminology cholesterol a lot. But most of us really don't know what cholesterol is. You know, is it good or is it bad? Well, let me tell you, everything that's present in our body has some good and bad of it, right? So cholesterol role is actually very important in our body. It is responsible for, digestion of the fats. It's actually present in our skin. It's necessary for our brain function. It's necessary for the functioning of our sex hormones, and it forms a very important part of all the hormones that are secreted by, our endocrine glands. But the reason why some of it is bad is because when you have excessive of it that your body cannot handle, or your liver cannot metabolize properly in an adequate fashion, that's when the problem is. So I'll give you an analogy. It's like, okay, food is good, right? Mm-hmm. We need food for our body, nutrition. But when we have excessive of it, that our body can metabolize or use, then it just gets accumulated as fat and creates obesity, that creates high blood pressure, you know, high cholesterol, and increased chances of having heart attack and stroke. Same is with cholesterol. So cholesterol is good, but the bad effect of the cholesterol is when it's excessively circulating in our blood vessels of the heart or other blood vessels of the body, that it just likes to seep inside the walls of these blood vessels. And when it does that, it starts creating these yellowish, disgusting plaques. The plaques that we don't want in our blood vessels, because it's going to create obstruction to the blood flow. And when this obstruction to the blood flow gets to a point where the target organ is unable to get adequate blood supply from, and that's when that target organ starts to be in distress. And that target organ could be heart. If blood supply to the heart is compromised, patient starts experiencing chest pains. If the blood supply to the leg arteries gets compromised, then patients start experiencing pain in the legs. Sometimes the kidneys can fail, liver can fail. People can have strokes if the blood supply to the brain arteries are also compromised. So that's how the cholesterol basically works.
I think that's a great summary. And I find often in my world in primary care, patients think only about the heart, right? When we're talking to them about their cholesterol. So they don't make the connection that so many other things can be affected, even in vision, to your point. When we talk about that, so, you know, how does a patient know their cholesterol? When should we check it? Like, how do we look for those kind of early warnings?
Yeah, so, in early in the show, we talked about the screening. Mm-hmm. The screening of cholesterol is absolutely important. I would recommend screening of cholesterol. But before we go there, I want to tell you that the cholesterol buildup starts happening in early teens. These plaques that I'm talking about, yeah. they start happening in the early teens. Mm-hmm. So which basically tells us that we should start, screening of patients' cholesterol in their early teens at least once a year. Mm-hmm. And there are some genetic abnormalities that are also associated with these cholesterol metabolism called familial hypercholesterolemia that can cause heart attacks and strokes very early in the life, causing premature heart disease or premature vascular disease. So I suggest to all my patients that you should have screening at least once a year. Mm-hmm. And a normal lipid profile that was generally used to screen patients comprises of a low-density lipoprotein. So, patients usually say LDL. So, LDL is kind of a bad cholesterol, okay? Mm-hmm. Like I said, nothing is bad, nothing is good, but we like to call LDL as bad because the 75% of our cholesterol that circulates in our body is in the form of LDL. And what this LDL does is, because these are small, tiny particles, mm-hmm. and these small, tiny particles are able to seep through the walls of our blood vessels causing plaques. And that's why the LDL is what we actually focus on. Although there are other bad cholesterol particles or lipid particles, I should say, available in the lipid profile. Another one would be triglycerides. Mm-hmm. Now, triglycerides is not a cholesterol, but it's a component of these small, tiny LDL particles. Now, higher are your triglycerides, higher are your chances to develop heart attacks and strokes also. But your doctor would first focus on LDL particles because that's the most common and most predominant kind of cholesterol that's circulating in the body. The other kind of cholesterol, I would say, is HDL that patients refer to generally as good cholesterol.
Good, yeah.
And the reason why it's good cholesterol is because what it does is it takes the cholesterol that is metabolized in the peripheral circulation and it acts as like a garbage truck. Mm-hmm. So it takes the cholesterol from the peripheral blood vessels, get to the liver for metabolization, or metabolism. And that's why it's called as good cholesterol. Having good cholesterol is good, as the name indicates, but there are some genetic abnormalities with this good cholesterol also. Patients sometimes have these genetic mutations that can create very high levels of good cholesterol. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I get patients in my clinic really worrying that, oh, my HDL is actually more than 100. Should I do something? And I tell them, you don't have to worry about this. It may be a genetic abnormality, but it is not going to cause any problems. What I really worry about is the low-density lipoprotein or the bad cholesterol or the LDL cholesterol. Mm-hmm.
So what should the number look like for LDL? I mean, I know if somebody goes to a doctor's appointment and sees somebody like yourself, you're going to tell them if it's a bad number. But what is kind of the number or level that people should be wanting to be near?
Yeah, that's a great question. So it depends. The answer is it depends. It depends on what is your actual risk factor for acquiring heart disease. But a general number that you should look for, let's say if you do not have any heart disease, then a general number of LDL should be less than 100 milligrams per deciliter. Mm-hmm. And our patients usually see that whenever their numbers are more than 100 milligrams per deciliter, it's actually highlighted as yellow because it just tells us that, hey, your LDL cholesterol is really high. You got to talk to your doctor, etc. Now, but if any patient has, is at high risk for developing heart disease or has heart disease in the form of a heart attack, or vascular disease, like if they have had a history of stroke in the past or any documented evidence of these plaques already building up or building up in their blood vessels, then their target number for the LDL may change. Then we like these patients to have even lower LDL levels, sometimes lower than 70, and even sometimes lower than 55 milligrams per deciliter. Many researchers have shown, sometimes patients say, Doc, my cholesterol is getting lower and lower. Are you worried about this? And I tell them, I'm not worried about this. Lower is better. Why? Because we have seen this in research trials. The lower your bad cholesterol is, the better it is.
That makes sense then why you'd want to be seen or have it checked once a year, because like you said, it depends. So it can change. And there's so many other different factors that play into that. Okay.
Yeah.
So you have your test. Let's say Steve has his test and his numbers come back and we say, oh, that bad cholesterol is a little high, that LDL. What are things he can do? Because, I feel like it can be confusing for patients. Eggs are bad. Eggs are good. It's genetic. It's not genetic. What are things we can do before we talk about a medicine?
Sure. Yeah, that's, again, a great question. So not all patients need medications. That's one thing that I tell all my patients. Well, yes, cholesterol is high. Cholesterol can vary from day to day, even from the time of the day. Let's say if you take a fasting cholesterol profile, your LDL numbers would be slightly lower. But if you just had a fatty meal and getting your blood tests done, then your numbers would be slightly different. It's just like our blood pressure, right? If you're upset, our blood pressure really goes high. It's just like a heart rate. When we exercise, our heart rate is going to go up. So it's not a very constant number, but any number would give us a general platform on which we can build recommendations. So what can people do to, let's say, if they really want to get their cholesterol down? The first thing that they can do is to ensure that they're having or following a healthy lifestyle. Mm-hmm. A healthy lifestyle is the cornerstone for a good heart health. Nothing can replace it. Even medications are recommended in addition to healthy lifestyle. So what does healthy lifestyle really mean for our patients? And, you know it's very easy for us to say, hey, have a healthy lifestyle. But what exactly does it mean? Okay. So it means that you got to take care of all your risk factors. Let's say if you have high blood pressure, take care of that. If you're obese, take care of that. And there are different ways to take care of obesity. And we can delve into that later on in the show. But and then if you're smoking, stop smoking. And then exercise. Exercise has been shown to be of tremendous benefit in reducing your chances of having a heart attack and stroke, controlling your blood pressure, controlling your cholesterol profile, and giving you that extra energy. Patients usually feel great when they exercise in the morning. Many patients tell me, "Well, I started exercising and I was a new person." Mm-hmm. We underestimate the power of exercise. And, in the world of, technology and medications, we sometimes like to jump on to the medications first. But I tell my patients, well, that's fine. You certainly could do that. But don't forget the importance of exercise. Now, healthy eating habits is also something important. Now, again, what is healthy eating habits? It's a broad topic. There are different kinds of diets available. There are keto diet, Atkins diet, which are for different purposes. But if somebody asks me, Doc, which diet I have to follow so that I can reduce my heart attack risk or stroke risk. Mm-hmm. So there's only one scientifically proven diet that has been shown, which is the Mediterranean diet. It was studied actually in a PrevMed study, which includes a lot of, and it's a very intuitive diet. When I tell you what exactly it is, you'll say, Doc, I knew this before. So it's very intuitive. It's like, a lot of fruits and vegetables. Less of red meat, more of white meat if you're a meat eater. A lot of olive oil, extra virgin olive oils. One serving of unsalted, unfried nuts, like it could be cashew nuts, it could be almonds, etc. And a lot of green leafy vegetables. So that's basically, it's very intuitive, right? We all know this kind of a diet here. So and guess what? It has been scientifically proven to reduce your chances of risk of having a heart attack.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, it's Dr. Sharma. It's the Mediterranean diet. I always tell my patients. I went to a conference when I was in residency, and it was a primary care conference. So we had specialists, right, all represented. And by the second day in the conference, they talk about preventive medicine. I had gotten online and Amazon bought a cookbook. From the Mediterranean diet, because it was just so prevalent in prevention for every organ system, every part. So good for all of us.
What about a half and half Mediterranean diet? So I don't mind white meat, but I prefer red meat. I like greens, but if I'm going to have nuts, they're usually salted. So I'm halfway there, I guess.
Yes. Well, there are a lot of data about association of less and less heart disease with plant-based diet. So again, there's a controversial studies going on or data. There's a lot of topics. There's a lot of expert consensus out there that which is better, vegetarian diet is better or a non-vegetarian diet is better. But again, the diet depends on what exactly is what we are trying to achieve here. If you're trying to achieve reduced risk of heart attacks and stroke, then some diet is better. But if you're trying to achieve just weight loss, then some other diet is better. So I would say to my patients that talk to your doctor who has, or talk to a nutritionist who's an expert in these nutrition before kind of going on a diet. But the general consensus is we know that excessive carbs is bad. We know that excessive, you know, complex sugars are bad. The sugars that are in, you know, the donuts, the cakes, etc. But simple sugars, like which are present in fruits, they're great. They don't affect that much, even if patients are diabetic.
Going back on the exercise point that you brought up, and I'm assuming even a little bit of exercise goes a long way, right? It's not like somebody has to run a marathon to get that proper exercise, just a little bit.
Yes, absolutely. Now, what's a little bit? What's a little bit? So a little bit is, you know, 30 minutes, actually 150 minutes of moderate intensity aerobic exercise per week. You can divide this into 3 days or 4 days. You can do, let's say, 30 minutes of moderate intensity exercises 5 days a week. That would give you 150 minutes of total, okay? If you want to be active, you know, some patients actually use pedometers to just measure their steps. You know, more than 10,000 steps is considered as active. But I also tell my patients, well, I encourage you to be active. That's great because, you know, the longer you sit, actually, this is another important point that I want to tell all my patients is that the longer you sit, if you have a sitting desk job, you're more at risk of developing heart disease and things. So you gotta get up and you know, every hour and you know, mobilize yourself. But 150 minutes of exercise is basically what is required and recommended by the American Heart Association.
What about the old, while we're talking about diet and exercise, a glass of wine is as good as an hour in the gym? What do you think about that?
Yeah, I don't think saying that is an appropriate statement. Before, many, many years ago, when scientists were studying the associations of, you know, food and cholesterol and the effect on their diet, they noticed that a glass of red wine actually raises your good cholesterol, okay? And they inferred from that observation that it's going to increase the good cholesterol, so anybody's risk of developing heart disease would be reduced. But the current ACC and American Heart Association guidelines do not recommend that. They say that, and they have studied all sorts of literature around this, and they came up with a statement and said, well, physicians should not ask their patients to start drinking just because they want to get their lipid profile under control, but they can certainly emphasize the importance of drinking in moderation if they're already doing it.
Yeah.
So, but they also say that no amount of alcohol, mm-hmm. or any amount of alcohol is actually associated with higher and higher heart disease risk. So physicians should technically recommend absolute zero alcohol. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I remember my, at the time, 85-year-old grandfather who would say that, you know, he would go downstairs in the basement and he would grab the bottle of wine. He'd have one shot glass of wine. Uh-huh. And he did it every day, you know, every night before he went to bed or whatever. But yeah, exactly.
Yeah, let me tell you this thing. You know, sometimes, I mean, our bodies are very unique. You know, we know that smoking is associated with lung cancer or causes lung cancer. This cause and effect phenomena is not always applicable to all the patients. And that's just because we haven't been able to understand our genetic predisposition to various disease processes. So, you know, we see all the time, you know, all the patients usually tell me, well, I know somebody who has smoked for almost 30 years and they are healthy as a horse. And I tell them, well, yeah, but that doesn't mean that they are not at risk. It's all about reducing your chances or risk of developing problems. So,
yeah. They also probably ate a pack of bacon every morning for breakfast. Yes, yes. I think that usually goes with their cigarettes. But it is, we do hear that. And you're right, we don't know. And we can be healthy until we're not, right?
Yes, you're
if
right.
We avoid prevention or screening.
Right.
Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, I again, another analogy so that I patient might understand that. Well, I say, well, if you're driving, would you drive without a seat belt or with a seat belt? Mm-hmm. Well, you would know maybe know of some person who would have driven all their life without a seatbelt and is still alive.
Yeah.
But then that does not necessarily mean that you should drive without a seatbelt. And that's just like, you know, you should always eat healthy. That does not mean that you should not eat healthy if you want to live a very healthy life.
By the way, we are not sponsored by the National Association of Traffic Safety, but it's just funny because this is the second or maybe third episode where we've brought up an analogy about wearing a seatbelt. So it totally makes sense. So you're talking about, we're mentioning some of the things that people just, so I've heard this, I've heard that, you know, mm-hmm. What are some of the things that you're hearing or seeing, reading or hearing from your patients that you really want to make sure you get the message, the proper message out there and say, you know what, this is a myth. It's not true. What things should we be talking about?
Yeah, that's a good question. Actually, you know, I gave a presentation to all our, colleagues in one of our symposium about myths in cholesterol management, and that presentation was generally focused for the physicians, but I'm just going to make it very simple so that our patients can understand that too. What I see in my clinic many times, patients say, "Well, doc, I don't want to lower my cholesterol because, you know, cholesterol is needed for brain function. Cholesterol is needed for sex hormones." And I've heard that if you lower your cholesterol with statin medications, statins are causing, you know, diabetes and dementia and other cognitive problems. So I tell them, well, it depends whether lowering your cholesterol is necessary or not. And the way you can find that out is by talking to your doctor, who will assess your cardiovascular risk. And we can certainly do that by assessing a patient's risk factor and telling them, hey, you have this much percentage risk, annually or in the next 10 years, et cetera. And depending on that risk, a doctor would advise you to be on a statin in addition to healthy diet and exercise, remember. But if you are eligible for a statin medication or a cholesterol-lowering medication, then that decision will depend on your overall, you know, cardiovascular risk. Now, once that is determined, and once you are, let's say, on a medication to lower your cholesterol, it is important to monitor your cholesterol on a periodic basis, making sure that your LDL cholesterol is you know, within the range. And like I said, lowering the cholesterol, the lower, the better. And what some of the things that I get in my clinic from the patients as well, they say, well, doc, my LDL cholesterol is 30 milligrams per deciliter now. You know, you have put me on, you know, atorvastatin or this statin, which is a higher dose. Should I just, you know, get it down? Should I just cut it in half? And I tell them, no, you don't have to, as long as you're tolerating it. It is good that your LDL cholesterol is less than 30. Why? Because lower the cholesterol, lower the bad cholesterol or LDL, the lower are your chances of having a heart attack and stroke. Okay. Then another myth that sometimes patients come to me and say is, well, doc, I've heard about statins can cause dementia. It can cause cognitive problems. I've started forgetting things since I've taken these statins. And I tell them, well, I understand that you might be noticing this, maybe because, you know, you had heard something about this in the literature or on internet, et cetera. But what is the scientific evidence behind this? The scientific evidence behind this is that statins, when you reduce cholesterol with statins, your memory does not get affected. And it has been studied in a scientific way in one of the trials called as Ebbinghaus trial, where they actually did some very fancy, cognitive testing on patients who were taking these statins. And they realized that after a few years or so, also, the patients were not demonstrating any signs of cognitive impairment, even if their cholesterol or LDL cholesterol was as low as 30 milligrams per deciliter. So scientifically, there is no way that statins can do this. The other hypothesis, or not hypothesis, I would say the other argument is that brain is such an important organ of our body. it would never depend on a cholesterol that is made elsewhere. Okay? If you have a gold bar, right? You would be hesitant to put that gold bar in a bank or at your friend's place. You would rather want to put it someplace very safe that you trust, right? Right? So same is with the brain. So brain says, okay, the cholesterol is so much important for me, I'm going to produce my own cholesterol. Brain has its own factory of cholesterol. It does not rely on the cholesterol that is made in the liver. So the cholesterol that is made in the brain does not cross the blood-brain barrier and goes elsewhere. So similarly, the cholesterol that is outside the brain has no relation to the cholesterol that is inside the brain. So because of this lack of relationship, we know that if you give somebody statins and lower their peripheral cholesterol, it's not going to affect their brain functioning at all. So that's the scientifically proven thing that basically scientists argue against the fact. And again, like I said, in that particular trial, it was not shown. The other myth, interesting myth, is about, and people are actually worried about their sexual health. And I encourage all my patients to talk about their sexual health because it's actually one of the marker for a living healthy. As I just told you, that once we lower the cholesterol, actually the cholesterol is actually an important component of sex hormones, right? So when we talk about sex hormones and cholesterol, naturally a question comes, well, if I lower my cholesterol too low, would my sex hormones be lower? Would my testosterone go lower? The answer to that question is yes, it does go lower. However, that amount of lower or that amount of reduction of the testosterone does not affect the sexual function. It does not cause erectile dysfunction. So if your doctor have decided to reduce your cholesterol because your heart health is in danger, then I don't think that our patients need to worry about their sexual health because it does not cause problems with sexual intercourse or erectile dysfunction. So that's an important thing for our patients. So these are some of the myths that generally I tell my patients, and it basically requires a little bit of talking to our patients and just reassuring, and they when we present to them some scientific data about this, then many of them get reassured.
That was my next question. I was going to ask how easy it is for you to get your patients to understand that no, what you've been hearing is not necessarily the truth.
It sometimes could be very difficult because sometimes it's very difficult to change someone's belief. But as a physician, we try to do our job as effectively as possible. I show them the scientific data. Sometimes I pull up a study, I show them the graphs, and I tell them, hey, this was published in New England Journal of Medicine, and this is a very reputed journal, versus the information that you must have heard or from your friends, et cetera. We have to compare those two pieces of information. And most of them are pretty good in accepting the fact because they all believe in science. But sometimes for some patients, it becomes very difficult to make them understand.
Yeah. And from my perspective in primary care, who is often the one who is asked for the Viagra or the Cialis, right? The ED treatment, it's the patients that haven't controlled their cholesterol, haven't controlled their blood pressure, that have damage, right? That are leading to that dysfunction. So it's easily, I think, seen and prevalent. What about the, I heard you, so myth, we said myth, it doesn't cause dementia. Myth, it doesn't cause diabetes.
Well,
And
yeah, so that's one thing.
yeah.
So we didn't talk about diabetes per se. So let's talk about diabetes a little bit. So another worry from patients is that it does cause new onset diabetes. Okay. So I wouldn't call it as a myth. The myth that I would call it as statins are bad because it causes new onset diabetes. So I tell my patients, well, that's a myth. But if you're asking me, well, doc, does it cause new onset diabetes? The answer to that question is it may. Yes, there are scientifically proven studies that if patients start taking statins, within 4 years or so, sometimes patients can get their HbA1c higher to the level of 6.5, or if a patient is already a diabetic, their glucose control may go a little, you know, awkward and difficult to manage if they're on insulin. However, again, you know, we're talking about risks versus benefits. However, A, there are not many patients who experiences this. It's very rare that a patient who is a non-diabetic would convert into a diabetic patient. Actually, patients who do get converted into diabetes would be patients who already are pre-diabetic, who are actually anyways going to get converted into diabetes later in the future. It's just that they're going to get converted into diabetes maybe 2 or 3 years sooner. But then if we don't provide these patients with statins, if we don't control their cholesterol properly, then they remain at risk for those 2 or 3 years for developing heart attack and stroke. So there was a very nice article that was published in JAMA, Journal of American Medical Association, about this particular association of statins and diabetes. And the bottom line was the benefit of the benefit of statins in eligible patients who really need statins and lowering cholesterol absolutely outweighs the slight amount of risk of new onset diabetes. So that certainly is not a myth, but the myth is that statins are bad, that it causes diabetes. Yeah.
What about the elephant in the room when we talk about any statin? It makes my muscles and joints hurt.
Yes, yeah.
I won't.
So that's a very controversial topic, actually. Mm-hmm. And I would say so far we haven't gotten to a point where we could reliably say that statins would not cause muscle aches. And again, scientific studies, some of the scientific studies actually that were done many, many years ago, they suggested that, well, statins would not cause any muscle aches. But then when we critically look at those studies, we realized that patients actually who were having muscle aches to begin with, they were excluded from the studies. And how could you just make a comment about muscle aches or these adverse effects when you do not even include them in the studies, right? So that was the controversy behind that. But then there was another trial recently, scientific study called a Samson trial that came, and then they studied some patients and they said, well, the bottom line of that was, well, that it may not be true that the patients who are on statins could have muscle aches. But you know, in my clinical practice, I see a lot of patients who develop muscle aches. But we also have to remember, I tell my patients that evaluating those muscle aches is very important. It's not any muscle aches or joint pains that could be attributed to the statins. We have to evaluate those muscle aches very carefully. We don't want to just presume that a joint pain because of knee arthritis or shoulder arthritis is caused by a statin, because that's not true. And that way, if we believe that, then that would refrain that patient from getting the beneficial effects of that statin. So a thorough evaluation has to be there.
And for the layperson, when you talk about statins, can you explain that a little bit more for the regular person who's not as familiar?
You mean for the muscle aches, you mean?
Just in general. So the term statins in terms of treatment.
In terms of treatment. So statins is actually is one of the cholesterol medication. There are different kinds of cholesterol medications that are in the market. Some drugs belong to the class statins, some drugs belong to the class called as cholesterol binding bile acid blockers. Some are intestinal absorption inhibitors. But a lot of research has been done on statin class of medications. A lot of research, especially to find out whether they reduce your risk of developing heart attacks and strokes. That's what we're interested in. We want to reduce anybody's risk of heart attack and strokes. Mm-hmm. And that's what these two things are extensively studied. So statins come out, as a winner among all the cholesterol medications in reducing anybody's chances of having heart attack and stroke. So that's why our first choice of cholesterol-lowering medication is always a statin.
So, is there anything that we haven't discussed that you really want to get across to our listeners?
Well, the one thing that I would encourage all my patients would be that if you have any questions, you know, it's always a good idea to research a little bit about any question online. And however, I must also say that talk to the experts, talk to your doctors, because they actually have the necessary expertise to critically appraise or review those scientific literature. Not always what is being posted out in the internet is supposed to be that way. Maybe the message is probably different. Maybe the message or maybe the message interpreted by the media or a general public is different from the message that that particular study is actually trying to get out. So unless you are expert in critically reviewing those statistical data set, you know, you should talk to your doctor before you make any of these important decisions of your life, especially when it comes to your heart.
I think we can finish with a fun one. I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit. You talked about exercise, which you walk the walk, or in this case, dance the dance. So I know that you are, is it a two-time Dancing with the Stars? It's a local version of Dancing with the Stars competitor,
Yes,
right?
yes.
And did you win it once? Could you talk a little bit about your
I
experience?
did. I did. It was the first one, actually. It was the first one, and I participated. My partner was Alice Fedorka Bennett. She used to work as a, I think, a nutritionist here before, and she was great. I still, miss dancing with her. So we won the prize a couple of years ago. We had a big trophy, and we were all really happy. And again, the reason why I participated in that is, A, I love dancing. I used to do this a lot. I choreographed a few dances when I was in college. It was like 20 years ago. And so when somebody approached me to do this, I was a little nervous. I was like, well, can I do this now or not? So I was confident in myself. So I tried and I did it. So we won. And the message that we wanted to get out there was that, I was talking about 150 minutes of brisk walking or normal exercise. So I said, well, 150 minutes of brisk walking could be boring. And if that's boring for you, how about 150 minutes of dancing every week? So I think people like that idea. And people still, say good things about that. The second year, which was this last year, there was another couple, Carrie Henry and Zach. He's the commissioner of I think, of the local county. They won, and they were phenomenal. We knew we were going to lose against them.
For those people who are going to be watching this episode on YouTube, I think I may have my hands on some of the photos from one or two of the competitions. So I'll be sure to put them on this so you can see a little bit of Dr. Sharma in action.
Yeah, in dancing too, in his red shoes
My
that
red
have
shoes,
gone
yes.
across our cardiology department in February. I know those are posted.
Yeah, those red shoes were given to me by my nurse Temperance Raymond. I want to call her out here because she is the funny one to have. She's just a pleasure to work with. She takes care of all my patients. And I think she's the one who comes up with these real, funny ideas for patient education, and she's just wonderful.
Well, Dr. Sharma, thank you so much for being a part of this podcast. We really appreciate it. Learned a lot, and it's really important to make sure that, if people hear certain things, that they're making sure that they get that the correct information from their providers, like people like you.
Yes, well, thank you for having me here. I'm glad that I was able to participate and convey those thoughts to my patients. I think it's going to be really helpful for all the patients who are going to hear this podcast.
Well, Steve, I think that was a great podcast today with Dr. Sharma. Certainly knowledgeable, and getting to the heart of some of those myths that we hear very frequently, whether in conversation, in an exam room. And I think he sold himself a little short, because I'll tell you, the patients that he's seeing, at least from me, are the ones that don't want to take any of those medicines or hear about those changes. So he did a great job. I think it's great to remember all of our listeners that February is American Heart Month. It's a great month to make some of those changes, those lifestyle changes, adding some exercise, cutting out of some of the red meat, some of the white meats, changing from butter to olive oil, and a good time to talk to your doctor. Once again, we heard that it depends. So talk to your doctor about concerns, questions you have, family histories, and really generally work on being a healthier, better you.
Absolutely. And another way you can try to do that, whether it's heart health or any other issue you may have, we encourage you to check out Guthrie.org/engage. And that offers up some opportunities for some tips or advice so that you can live a little bit healthier lifestyle. Until next time, have a great day, Judge Johnson.
Take care, Steve. Bye.